All right, so are you ready to dive deep into a Supreme Court case that still really has an impact today?
Let's do it.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So this one is Hurisiades v. Shaughnessy, and this case is from 1952.
Okay.
And we're going to be talking about the power of the U.S. government to deport immigrants,
Right.
even those who have been living in the U.S. for decades.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the topic.
It's a big one.
It's a big one for sure.
And I think what makes this case so interesting is that it's not about people who just came to the US or folks who came illegally.
Right.
These were people who had really built lives here over decades.
Right.
They had roots, they had families, and really, everything you would associate with being American,
Yeah.
except for that legal document.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about these folks. Who were they?
Sure. So we're looking at three individuals. Hurisiades, he was from Greece.
Okay.
Mashidi from Italy.
Okay.
And Mrs. Coleman, she was originally from Russia.
Okay.
And all three of them had been in the US for over 30 years. Yeah. So, I mean, imagine that practically a lifetime.
Right.
They all had families, they had jobs, the whole nine yards.
Yeah, but there's a catch,
Yeah, it
right?
is a catch. Yeah. There was a shadow from their past that came back to haunt them.
Oh, okay. I'm all ears. What was it?
So at one point, each of them had been members of the Communist Party.
Okay.
And this is crucial. They had all left the party years before the Alien Registration Act of 1940 was even enacted. And this act made past membership in the Communist Party grounds for deportation.
So, hold on. So the law was applied retroactively.
Yes.
That seems a little bit tricky.
It certainly raises questions about fairness and due process.
Yeah.
And that's where the legal arguments get really interesting.
Okay.
The government leaned heavily on what's called the plenary power doctrine. And this is a legal concept that basically says the government has almost unchecked power when it comes to immigration.
Really?
So deportation for pretty much any reason.
So essentially what you're saying is the government was arguing we can deport whoever we want, whenever we want, because we can.
That's a simplified way of putting it, but yeah, you're
Okay.
getting the gist.
Okay.
And the Supreme Court had to decide, would they agree and grant the government this sweeping authority,
Right.
or would they step in to protect the rights of these long-term residents?
Okay, so what happened? Which way did the court swing?
Well, in a 5-4 decision, the court sided with the government. Yeah, it was a close one.
Okay.
Justice Jackson wrote the majority opinion.
Okay.
And he stated that the power to deport non-citizens is inherent to a sovereign nation's right to protect itself.
Okay.
He even went on to say that an immigrant's right to remain in the U.S. is a matter of permission and tolerance.
Permission and tolerance. So that seems to frame immigrants almost as guests at the mercy of a host, even after decades of building a life here.
Yeah, you're right. It's a potent observation.
Yeah.
And it gets to the heart of what many people find unsettling about this case, which is, the precariousness of immigrant rights, even after decades of residence.
Yeah.
The majority argued that deportation, because it was a civil and not a criminal procedure, didn't violate the Constitution's ban on ex post facto laws.
Okay.
So those are laws that punish actions retroactively.
Okay.
So they were essentially saying it's not punishment,
Right.
it's just us exercising our right to decide who stays and who goes.
But you said it was a 5-4 decision,
Aye.
right? So some of the justices saw this differently.
Absolutely. Justice Douglas, joined by Justice Black, authored a powerful dissent.
Okay.
And they argued that the Constitution does protect long-term residents from arbitrary government actions, including deportation based solely on past beliefs.
So you're saying even if someone hasn't broken any laws
Yeah.
currently, the government can still deport them based on something they believed or were affiliated with years ago?
That's right.
That seems at odds with fairness.
Yeah, and that's exactly the point Justice Douglas was driving at. He saw this as a clear violation of the Fifth Amendment,
Okay.
a form of punishment disguised as a civil procedure. And he didn't shy away from highlighting the human cost of this decision.
And I'm guessing this is where we get some of those really powerful, often quoted lines about the impact of deportation.
You are right. Justice Douglas wrote, "Banishment is punishment in the practical sense. It may deprive a man and his family of all that makes life worthwhile."
Wow.
He wanted to make the court and the public really see the real families being torn apart by this ruling.
Wow. So powerful words.
Yeah.
So it sounds like this case really just boils down to a clash of values. National security versus individual
That's
rights.
a really good way to frame it.
And in 1952, at least the court leaned heavily toward national security.
Yeah, and I think it's important to remember the historical context here.
Right.
This case was decided during the Red Scare,
yeah,
a time of widespread fear and paranoia about communism.
Right.
McCarthyism was in full swing.
Right.
Anyone even suspected of communist sympathies was under scrutiny.
Right. The Cold War was really heating up.
Right.
So in that climate, it's not really surprising that the court may have been inclined to give the government a lot of leeway in the name of national security.
Exactly. But what's fascinating is that even though the Cold War ended decades ago,
right,
Hurezades v. Shaughnessy is still cited in legal battles over immigration policy today.
Really? So this case from the 1950s that was decided during a very specific and tense historical moment still has an impact on the 21st century.
Yeah, it really speaks to the enduring power of precedent in legal matters.
Wow.
And in this case, it reinforces this idea that the government has this broad, almost unchecked power when it comes to immigration.
Yeah.
This plenary power doctrine is still alive and well.
That's kind of a sobering thought.
Yeah.
It seems to suggest that even if you've built a life here, you've paid your taxes, you've raised a family, basically lived as an American in every sense of the word, you can still be deported if the government decides it's in the national interest.
Yeah, that's the reality for many immigrants today. And this case just underscores that precarious nature of their legal status.
Right.
You know, it raises fundamental questions about what it even means to be American.
Right.
And what rights and protections should be afforded to those who are not citizens.
Yeah, it almost feels like there's this tension between the idea of America as a welcoming land of opportunity and this harsh reality of a system that can seem arbitrary and unforgiving at times.
Yeah. That tension is at the heart of many debates about immigration policy.
Right.
And this case really brings those tensions into focus.
Yeah.
It forces us to think about, you know, how much power should the government have to exclude or remove individuals?
Right.
Even those who have established deep roots and, yeah, have contributed to society.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier that Justice Douglas wasn't alone in his dissent.
Right.
There was another opinion, right?
Yes.
A concurring opinion by Justice Frankfurter.
That's right.
Okay.
And it offers a different perspective on the whole issue.
Okay.
So Justice Frankfurter agreed with the majority's outcome that the immigrants should be deported, but he arrived at that conclusion through a different line of reasoning.
Okay. So he agreed with the government, but not for the same reasons.
Exactly.
Okay. So what was his rationale?
He believed that immigration is fundamentally a political question, not a legal one.
Okay.
So he argued that the courts shouldn't be meddling in these sorts of decisions at all.
Hmm.
He was essentially saying, this is a matter for Congress to decide, not for the judiciary.
So even if you believe that the government is acting unfairly,
yeah,
there's no recourse through the courts.
According to Justice Frankfurter's view, that's correct.
Wow.
He believed that challenges to unwise or cruel legislation should be directed towards the political branches of government, Congress and the executive, not the judiciary.
But what happens if the political process fails to protect those who are vulnerable?
Right. Yeah.
What if Congress passes laws that are discriminatory or unjust?
Right.
Where do people turn for help then?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Justice Frankfurter's view raises concerns about, you know, the effectiveness of checks and balances when it comes to immigration policy.
Right.
And if the courts are essentially hands-off, it leaves a lot of power concentrated in the hands of the political branches,
yeah,
which can be swayed by public opinion and political pressures.
So it makes you wonder, in cases like this, where individual rights are really at stake, who is ultimately responsible for protecting those rights? The courts,
yeah,
Congress,
yeah,
the people themselves.
It's a tough question. And that's really the dilemma at the heart of this case.
Yeah.
And it continues to resonate today.
Yeah.
You know, Hurezades v. Shaughnessy really forces us to confront these complexities of balancing national security concerns,
right,
with the rights of individuals,
yeah,
especially those who are not citizens.
Yeah.
It challenges us to think critically about the role of the courts, the power of the government, mm-hmm, and the meaning of justice in a diverse and ever-changing society.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about the legal and historical context, but I'm kind of curious about the human side of the story.
Yeah.
What ultimately happened to Hurezades Meschitte and Mrs. Coleman after the Supreme Court made its ruling?
Sadly, despite their decades of life in the U.S., their families, their contributions to their communities, all three were deported.
Wow. Hearing that really drives home the personal impact of this decision. It's easy to get lost in the legal arguments, but at the end of the day, Real people were affected, their lives uprooted, their families separated. Yeah,
it's a reminder that legal decisions have very real consequences.
Yeah.
And those consequences are often felt most acutely by those who are already marginalized or vulnerable.
Absolutely. This case is so much more than just a legal precedent. It's a story about people, about belonging, about what it means to call a place home.
Yeah.
And it raises some uncomfortable questions about whether America truly lives up to its ideals as a land of opportunity and freedom for all.
You've hit on a crucial point.
Yeah.
This case exposes the gap that sometimes exists between our aspirations as a nation.
Right.
And the realities on the ground.
Right. It's a gap that we need to be aware of and work to bridge. So we've kind of explored the past, we've delved into the legal arguments and glimpsed the human impact of this case. But I think the question is, what does all of this mean for us today?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we need to think about going forward.
Yeah.
How does this case impact us today?
Yeah, it's been a fascinating journey through this case, I think. Yeah. Really sobering. But, you know, we've unpacked a lot of these legal arguments. We've delved into the historical context. We've even kind of touched on the emotional weight of this decision.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest question that we're left with is, what does Harizides v. Shaughnessy tell us about where we stand today?
That is the key takeaway, is that this case, like we've been saying, is more than just a historical footnote.
Right.
It gives us a way to examine the ongoing tensions and the complexities of immigration in the United States.
Yeah.
It feels like we're still grappling with so many of the same questions.
Mm-hmm.
National security versus individual rights.
Yeah.
The power of the government versus the rights of non-citizens.
Yeah.
It's almost like this case has become a touchstone for these bigger debates.
Precisely. And I think one of the most important lessons we can draw from Harizides is the lasting impact of precedent.
Yeah.
You know, this case solidified the plenary power doctrine.
Right.
And that doctrine continues to shape legal arguments and policy decisions even today.
So even though times have changed, the legal framework established back in 1952 still really has implications in the real world.
Absolutely. For anyone who's interested in understanding immigration law and policy in the U.S.,
yeah,
Harizides is essential reading. It lays bare the power dynamics at play.
Yeah.
And it really helps us understand how we got to where we are today.
Okay, but let's get a little bit more practical here.
Mm-hmm.
What are some specific takeaways for our listeners?
Sure.
Things they can keep in mind as they're engaging with these issues.
Well, first and foremost, I think it's just crucial to be aware of this ongoing debate about the legal status of immigrants.
Yeah.
You know, we touched on this earlier, the idea of permission and tolerance versus a more fundamental right to be here.
Right.
That debate is far from settled.
Oh, yeah.
And it plays out in courtrooms and legislative chambers all across the country.
Right. It's a question that goes to the very heart of what it means to be American.
Exactly.
Who gets to decide who belongs and on what terms.
Exactly. Another key takeaway is to remember that the law is not static.
Right.
It's constantly evolving.
Yeah.
Influenced by social movements, political shifts, even cultural trends.
Yeah.
So what seemed like a settled issue in 1952 might be hotly contested today.
So there's hope for change.
There is.
Even a precedent as strong as Harizides could be revisited or reinterpreted.
Absolutely. Legal precedents can be challenged, they can be overturned, they can be modified over time,
okay.
And it's up to us as engaged citizens to participate in that process, to raise our voices, to advocate for change, to hold our elected officials accountable.
That's a powerful reminder. Sometimes it feels so daunting to go up against a system that just seems so entrenched.
Yeah.
But this case really shows us that change as possible.
It is. And that's where informed engagement really comes in.
Yeah.
We need to understand the historical context, the legal arguments, the human stories, all the things we've explored today.
Yeah.
So we can make informed decisions and advocate for policies that reflect our values.
So it's not enough to just be aware of the issues.
Right.
We need to be active participants.
Yes.
In shaping the future we want. We can't just sit back and say, well, the Supreme Court decided that back in 1952, so that's that.
You got it. Harizides v. Shaughnessy serves as both a cautionary tale and a call to action.
Yeah.
It reminds us of the fragility of rights,
mm-hmm.
especially for those who are not citizens.
Right.
But it also highlights the potential for change through persistent advocacy and a commitment to justice.
This deep dive has been so eye-opening. It's given us a lot to think about, and I'm hoping that our listeners are walking away with a renewed sense of really how important it is to engage with these complex issues.
I hope so, too. And remember, this conversation doesn't end here.
Right.
You know, keep exploring, keep questioning, keep pushing for a more just and equitable immigration system.
That's a great point to end on. Thanks for guiding us through this complex and thought-provoking case.
Of course.
It's been a real privilege to have you on the show.
It's been a pleasure, and thank you for hosting such a stimulating and insightful discussion.
It's been a fascinating deep dive.
Yeah.
A little bit sobering, I think.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, we've unpacked a lot of the legal arguments. We delved into the historical context. We even got to touch on, like, the emotional weight of this decision.
Yeah.
But the question that's really in my mind is, what does Herizades v. Shaughnessy really tell us about where we stand today?
That's the real takeaway, isn't it? Like, we've been saying this case is more than just some kind of historical footnote. It really lets us examine the ongoing tensions and complexities of immigration in the U.S.
Yeah, it really feels like we're still grappling with the same questions.
Yeah.
Like national security versus individual rights, the power of the government versus, you know, the rights of non-citizens. It feels like this case is kind of a touchstone for these bigger debates.
Yeah, it is. And one of the most important things I think we can learn from Herizades is the lasting impact of precedent.
Yeah.
Like, this case made the plenary power doctrine a solid thing.
Right.
And that still shapes legal arguments and policy decisions even now.
So even though it's a different time now, the legal framework from 1952
right.
really still has real-world effects.
It does. For anyone who is interested in understanding immigration law and policy in the U.S.,
yeah.
Herizades is a must-read. It shows the power dynamics at play.
Yeah.
And it helps us really understand how we ended up where we are now.
Okay, let's get a little bit more practical, though.
Okay.
What are some actual takeaways for our listeners? Some things that they can keep in mind as they engage with these issues.
Well, first and foremost, I think you just have to be aware of the debate that's going on about the legal status of immigrants.
Okay.
We talked about this before, like the whole idea of permission and tolerance versus a basic right to be here.
Right.
And that's a debate that's nowhere near settled.
Yep.
And it's playing out in courtrooms and, you know, legislatures all over the country.
Right. It's a question that I think really gets to the heart of what it means to be American.
Totally.
Who gets to decide who belongs here and for what reasons?
Exactly. And another takeaway, I think, is to just remember that the law isn't set in stone.
Right.
It's constantly evolving.
Yeah.
It changes with social movements and political shifts and even cultural trends.
Right.
So something that felt settled back in 1952 may be totally different today.
So there's hope for change then.
There is.
Like even a precedent as strong as Herizades could be revisited.
Yeah.
Or reinterpreted.
Absolutely. Legal precedents can be challenged,
yes.
overturned, modified over time. And it's really up to us as, you know, people who are engaged.
As citizens.
Right, as citizens to participate in that process. You know, raise our voices, advocate for change, hold our elected officials accountable.
It's a powerful reminder. It sometimes feels so daunting to go up against a system that seems so, you know, unchangeable.
Yeah.
But this case shows us that change can happen.
It can. And that's where I think it's really important to be engaged and informed.
Yeah.
You have to understand the historical context, the legal arguments, the human stories, all the things we talked about today.
Right.
To be able to make informed decisions and advocate for policies that, you know, reflect what we believe in.
So it's not enough to just know about the issues.
Right.
We have to be active.
We do.
In shaping the future. We can't just sit back and be like, well, the Supreme Court said that in 1952, so that's the end of it.
Exactly. Herizades v. Shaughnessy is like a cautionary tale, but also like a call to action.
Right.
It shows us how fragile rights are.
Yeah.
Especially for non-citizens. But it also shows us that change can happen when people are persistent and really committed to justice.
This deep dive has been so eye-opening.
Good. I'm glad.
I've learned so much. I hope our listeners are walking away, you know, with a better sense of how important it is to engage with these issues.
Me too. And remember, guys, this conversation doesn't stop here.
Right.
Keep learning. Keep asking questions. Keep pushing for an immigration system that's more fair and just.
That's a great point to end on. Thank you so much for taking us through this case.
Of course.
It's been really great having you on the show.
Yeah, this has been great. I really enjoyed this conversation. It was really stimulating and insightful.
And to everyone listening out there, thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive. Keep those minds thinking, and we'll catch you next time.